"That's Sir Rollo to you, madam," Sir Rollo bellowed through gritted teeth as he heaved himself to his feet. He was nothing short of apoplectic, and looked like he might burst in the same way that his beloved melons had done beneath our plummeting bottoms. "You've ruined me. I was banking on that prize money, and now I've already gone and spent it."
I recalled what Dicky had vouchsafed about the precarious state of Sir Rollo's financial affairs. It was hard to imagine the prize money for a vegetable competition amounting to much, but every little bit counts. "I'll make it up to you," I said, looking up at the fat checkered figure looming angrily over me. "Would you like me to lick the melon juice from my bosoms?"
"No, I would not," Sir Rollo said to my surprise and disappointment. "I never want to see your infernal bosoms again. I never want to hear any mention of them."
And with that, he stormed off, leaving me sitting in the remains of the vegetable patch, feeling dashed sorry for myself.
"Napkin, Miss Fortnum."
Familiar though the voice was, I nonetheless started upwards, bosoms rebounding in belated surprise. Jennings had appeared out of nowhere, towels, soap, and a bucket of warm water in hand. I've no idea how he got so bally good at being a valet, but I was as grateful then for his sudden presence by my side as I had ever been. "Clean me up, would you, Jennings, old chap?" I said, holding back tears. "I've made a ghastly mess of things, in every sense of the word." Jennings held out a hand to help me to my feet, dunked a towel in the bucket of hot H2O, and then sloshed it about my boobies and stomach until they were squeaky clean.
"Where does that leave the wager, I wonder?"
he mused aloud as he scooped a handful of melon pulp from deep between my bosoms. "It leaves the wager frozen," I said, "in limbo. And the worst part of it is that, despite all my best efforts, and despite actually owning the boobies in question, Dicky has somehow found himself slightly in the lead. If Sir Rollo is going to place an embargo on boob-based banter for the remainder of the weekend, then I lose my chance to take the lead."
"And the forfeit, Miss Fortnum?"
"The loser takes breakfast on Monday in the bath," I said. "Not that I mind stripping off. In fact, the thought of it strikes me as rather fun. But it's the principle of losing out to Dicky, you see."
"Then," said Jennings, rolling down his sleeves, "we shall have to rekindle Sir Rollo's enthusiasm for your physique, Miss Fortnum."
"Quite, Jennings," I sniffed, and buttoned my physique up, or at least the bits of it that didn't resist containment. The upper slopes of my breasts still surged upwards, and a keen breast-watcher would even have been pleased to note that even the tops of my now once more pale and softened areolas were still peeping out. Not that there were any keen breast-watchers left now that Sir Rollo had got into such a dreadful funk. Jennings' interest in my breasts was, I still told myself, purely professional. Lunch was unbearable. Dicky made the mistake early on of misreading Sir Rollo's mood entirely, and, as we were making our way to the table, loudly remarked to him on the way my now tactically conservative attire failed to show off the goodies beneath.
"I don't want to know,"
Sir Rollo snapped, placed hands over cauliflower ears, and headed all the way to the other end of the table to sit next to his lady wife, who for once regarded him with something approaching approval.
"What's got into Uncle Rollo?"
Dicky leaned across and whispered. "Can't really explain now," I whispered back. "Suffice it to say that he's gone off boobies for the time being, perhaps forever." Dicky leaned back again and smiled broadly.
"Well, well, correct me if I'm wrong, eggs old bean, but I'm currently in the lead, am I not? I might as well chalk up my victory already."
"The weekend's not over, Dicky," I said, my faith in Jennings's machinations implicit. Having escaped the lunch table as quickly as I could, I wandered the sun-dappled grounds of the house in tragic, contemplative, buttoned-up solitude. Well, not quite. Jennings was hovering at a discreet distance, but you get the idea. Until, down by the stream, I chanced upon Spunky Spunkmeyer, standing before easel and canvas, parrot in one hand, brush in the other. He was, in case you hadn't already guessed, painting. "What ho, Spunky!" I called. Spunky turned and smiled. He was dashed handsome. Blue eyes, jet-black hair, tall, strapping, lantern-jawed, rich, all that kind of thing. And in the car, on the way up, I had got the distinct sense that he had been stealing glances at my bouncing chest, little realizing that such furtive larceny was quite unnecessary, given how willing I am to give booby glances away entirely for free. In America, at least, the fuller female form was presumably still fashionable and desirable. I now wished I hadn't buttoned myself up quite so tightly. My bosoms were in especially desperate need for attention now that Sir Rollo had so forthrightly rejected them. I began imagining the morning's breast-groping festivities, but with Spunky Spunkmeyer recast in the role of Sir Rollo, and my nipples began to tingle and stiffen with naughty delight beneath my cotton and tweed.
"Hello there, Felicity,"
he said as I walked over to peer over his shoulder at the canvas. "Hope I'm not interrupting," I chirped.
"Not at all,"
said Spunky, his smile broadening to reveal yet more of his seemingly endless supply of pristine white teeth. His painting of the stream and the rolling hills beyond was shaping up nicely. "You have a very good eye," I said. "Two of them, in fact." Spunky sparkled both of those blue eyes at me in turn, and I melted a little. "Jennings, what do you make of Spunky's work in progress here?" Jennings emerged from the undergrowth and joined us to peer at the painting.
"Worthy of Constable himself," he said, though I'm not sure what the police had to do with it.
Jennings was enigmatic like that. "Be that as it may, Jennings," I said, "I think Spunky's painting is a passionate tribute to England's green bosom."
"Excuse me?"
said Spunky with an inquisitive smile. "Oh, my apologies, Spunky. You must forgive my English idioms. We are in what we limeys call the bosom of the countryside."
"It's a charming turn of phrase,"
said Spunky, paintbrush hovering and, I could not help but notice, trembling a little in his hand. "Isn't it just," I chirruped, "and frightfully appropriate. When I awake in the morning with my own huge bosom looming over me, I feel like I am in the foothills of some rolling mountain range."
"The English countryside personified,"
said Spunky with endless charm. I took a step closer. "The rolling curves of your composition suggest a sincere passion for bosoms, metaphorically speaking, of course." My skills at diverting any conversation to the subject of my breasts felt less useful now that the wager was all but lost, but a boob-based chat with so dashing a fellow as Spunky Spunkmeyer was a decent enough compensation.
"England's green bosom,"
chuckled Spunky as he returned his attention to the painting. As the soft bristles of his brush stroked the pinnacles of my own rounded hillocks, I felt the pinnacle of my own rounded hillocks tingle vicariously.
"And it most certainly is green. Knowing that I would be coming out to the countryside, I packed extra supplies of green oil paint in my luggage, and it's just as well."
"There certainly are a lot of bosoms to paint green," I said in agreement. Jennings cleared his throat.
"Mr. Spunkmeyer, might I inquire, do you have any experience in rendering on canvas the human form?"
"I'm a little out of practice," admitted Spunky. "But yes, I painted my fair share of nudes at art college."
"Would you," Jennings continued, "consider painting Miss Fortnum this weekend?"
"What a capital idea, Jennings," I enthused, over the moon at the prospect of foisting my bare breasts on the handsome American for what would presumably be hours on end. "Oh, do say you will, Spunky." Spunky gave a gracious smile.
"It would be my pleasure," he said.
If his eye for real bosoms was as keen as his eye for metaphorical ones, then pleasure would be an understatement.
"Tomorrow morning, then, before we all go to the village fete," said Jennings, "in Miss Fortnum's room?"
"I look forward to it," said Spunky. "I hope you own a green dress, though, as that's mostly the paint color I have with me, for painting all of this English grass."
I tried not to look as crestfallen as I felt. I didn't want to be painted clothes, dash it. I wanted my excellent boobies immortalized forever in all their magnificent naked glory. Jennings had a brief private word or two with Spunky, presumably chaperoning house rules regarding respect for my personage, after which we left the American to finish his painting and strolled back up to the house. "Good work hooking me up with handsome Spunky," I chortled to Jennings as we walked. "I can't wait to be painted in the morning."
"I think Mr. Spunkmeyer will do a fine job of painting you, Jennings said. He will call on us after breakfast.
In that case, I think I'll take breakfast in my room tomorrow, I said.
Very good, Miss Fortnum.
And dinner tonight, too. I can't face Sir Rollo again today. Fix me a sandwich or something, will you?
Certainly, Miss Fortnum.
Might I ask what it was you spoke to Spunky about just before we left him, Jennings? I was rather disappointed that he was expecting to paint me clothed. I hope you weren't swearing him to good behaviour.
On the contrary, Miss Fortnum, said Jennings. I gave him very clear instructions to paint your bare breasts.
I was taken aback. It wasn't like Jennings to be so liberal-minded about these things. I didn't press him on the matter, but I have found that when something seems too good to be true, it usually is. And I wondered what Jennings was up to this time. Sunday. Sir Rollo's cock roused me from my slumber the next morning, the half-hearted crowing an unwelcome reminder of our disastrous booby-groping and melon-destroying encounter the day before. The curtains had been drawn to let in the morning sun, and I peered over the mountain range of my filmily clad chest to see Jennings busying himself with my breakfast. I sat up as the valet set my cup of tea on the bedside table. "It's booby-painting day!" I said with relish, as I stretched my arms and felt my fabulous breasts press against the nightie.
"A fine morning for it," said Jennings.
"How are the boobies looking?" I asked, and peeled off my nightie to let my breasts jut proudly huge and proudly naked over the quilt. I regarded Jennings with a solemn brow as Jennings regarded me with a twitching vein on his right temple.
"Finer than ever," Jennings said.
"Wonderful, Jennings," I said, and looked down. They were indeed looking on fine form, particularly high and firm, and they had even felt a tad bigger in the ever-tighter confines of the nightie. "How about the nipples? Do you think I should leave them soft, pink and puffy, the way they are now, or should I take steps to stiffen them up a jot?"
"Both nipple states have their respective aesthetic merits," said Jennings.
I winked at him as I took a sip of tea, and then flung aside the quilt and swung my long legs over the side of the bed and placed my feet in the pink slippers, which Jennings had positioned in precisely the right place on the floor by the bed. I stood, fully nude, except for the pink slippers, then pulled the pin from my hair, spread my arms, and let hair and breasts shake freely from side to side. Thrilling, though it is to get my boobies painted, I mused aloud as my naked breasts swung from side to side before me. I can't help thinking that they look their absolute best in motion. Don't you agree?
They do look particularly enticing when they undulate the way they are doing now, Miss Fortnum, said Jennings.
He hadn't used the word enticing to describe my breasts before. I kept the booby shimmy going to entice him some more. And Jennings wasn't the only one at the receiving end of my breast-based pleasure. Whenever I shook, bounced, or wobbled my boobies, they would rub against one another, and the tingly feeling that spread around my body as a result was never less than delicious. "Mimsy looking good?" Jennings glanced down with discreet brevity.
"In fine, lush fettle," he said. "But it is Miss Fortnum's breasts to which Mr. Spunkmeyer will be devoting his artistic prowess."
"Quite right, too," I said. "I hope my naked body isn't going to be too much for him." There was a knock on the bedroom door.
"I believe, Miss Fortnum," said Jennings, "that we are about to find out."
I threw on the silk bathrobe that Jennings had laid out on the bed. Perhaps a rather fruitless gesture, given that I'd be taking it off again within minutes, but I did enjoy undressing for a man, rather than having him walk in on me naked. Not that I would have objected in either case, of course, especially if the man in question was as good-looking as Spunky Spunkmeyer.
"Is Miss decent?"
asked Jennings, hand poised on knob. The doorknob, I mean. "Never," I said, and tied tight the silk sash around my teensy waist, putting just enough fabric closed over my enormous chest to cover up my nipples, my expansive nude décolletage squeezing, bulging, and heaving between. Jennings opened the door. Spunky was standing there in his linen suit, holding a wooden paint box by its handle.
"Good morning, Jennings,"
Spunky said.
"I'm here to paint Miss Fortnum's breasts, as discussed."
"Mr. Spunkmeyer, do come in,"
said Jennings, and stood aside. "Yoo-hoo!" I called from beside the window. "Good morning, Spunky. My breasts are right here, conveniently attached to me." I gave my scantily clad appendages a heavy wiggle to draw attention to them.
"Good morning, Felicity,"
smiled Spunky.
"Shall we get to it?"
"Rather," I said. "I was up half the night with excitement, and I can't wait a moment longer. Where do you want me?"
"Why don't you take a seat where you are? Plenty of natural light from the window."
"You do seem to know what you're doing," I gushed. Jennings drifted across the room and positioned a chair beneath my bottom. I sat down. "Let me know when you want me to bare my breasts for you. Just say the word." Jennings provided a chair for Spunky, who sat down opposite and opened his paint box.
"Just one moment, Felicity. I'll just mix my paints."
It suddenly struck me that something was missing. Something very important. "Spunky," I said. "Not that I want to tell you how to do your job, but where is your canvas?" Spunky gave a strange smile.
"Right in front of me, of course."
I wondered who was losing their mind, Spunky or me. I was convinced that I could see neither canvas nor easel. Spunky finished stirring together two blobs of green in different shades.
"You can uncover your breasts now, Felicity," he said.
Still rather confused, I was nonetheless not going to turn down the opportunity to get my knockers out, and so I tugged open the sash at my waist, letting the panels of silk flop down from my upturned, busty peaks. Then I placed the tips of my forefingers on the pink lapels and pulled them lightly to either side, opening the curtains on the endless vista of my perfect engorged chest.
"Ye gods,"
Spunky muttered after he had recovered from the shock.
"You really do have remarkable breasts, Felicity."
"That means all the more coming from an artist like you, Spunky," I giggled. Spunky dipped his brush in a blob of dark green paint and held it aloft.
"Would you mind holding your breasts still with your hands, please?"
It seemed like quite a provocative pose, but I obediently placed my hands under my boobies and stopped them dead in their aimless resting wobble. Then, to my surprise, Spunky leaned forward and applied a soft, oily green brushstroke to my right boobie, just above the areola, which had already begun to stiffen a little in response. "Goodness, Spunky!" I exclaimed, not so much annoyed as bemused. "Whatever are you doing?"
"Mr. Spunkmeyer," said Jennings from a few feet away, "is painting your breasts."
"This isn't quite what I had in mind," I said. Spunky hesitated and looked from Jennings to me and then back again, via an eyeful of bosom each time.
"Has there been some misunderstanding?"
he said. I began to speak, but Jennings stepped in.
"No misunderstanding," he said. "Please, continue as discussed. And Miss Fortnum, do be so kind as to hold your womanliness steady while Mr. Spunkmeyer plies his craft."
I shrugged, apologized for shrugging, and then sat as still as a statue while Spunky's tool slid and tickled its way all over my big breasts. And as I looked down at the expanding coat of colour being applied, I began to follow Jennings' line of thinking. "Now I see what you're up to, Jennings," I said, my broad, toothy smile returning. "Very clever."
"Thank you, Miss Fortnum. I'm sorry for any confusion I may have caused."
"Not at all, Jennings. I suppose after this it's straight down to the village fete, eh, what?"
"Quite, Miss Fortnum,"
said Jennings. The fete on F Cup Village Green was a gay and jolly affair. The breeze and the bunting, the marquee blinding white in the afternoon sun. Dicky and Babs were trying their luck on the coconut shies. Ex-Benedict was giving the test-your-weight machine a valiant go, and Spunky and I were perusing the paintings for sale by a local artist. "Not a spot on your talents," I remarked.
"You flatter me," said Spunky,
but I didn't really. The paintings were dreadful. A voice crackled over the public address system, announcing the village contest to be held shortly in the cricket pavilion.
"Good luck," Spunky whispered.
"I don't need luck," I said back, fluttering my eyelashes at the handsome American. "I'm in very capable hands. Strong, manly, artistic hands."
"See you over there," said Spunky.
He winked, I blew him a kiss, and sauntered off to find Sir Rollo. The lord of the manor was lurking gloomily by the beer stool. He looked up when he saw me, and then looked rather like he wished he hadn't, and looked back down at his pint.
"You again,"
he said gruffly.
"What do you want?"
"Aren't you coming to the vegetable contest?" I said brightly, holding out an arm for him to hook his into.
"If that's meant to be a joke, Miss Fortnum, then I must say that it is in dashed poor taste,"
Sir Rollo said.
"I have nothing to exhibit. I'll be laughed out of the cricket pavilion."
I took his arm. "Come along," I said. "I've brought along something to exhibit myself." Sir Rollo peered at me through his monocle and reluctantly allowed himself to be steered through the fete to the venue of the vegetable contest. The polling booths had been set up, wooden cubicles that normally only saw usage at election time. In each one, a table upon which the contestants were to place their wares, and a chair to sit upon. "Wait there," I said to Sir Rollo. "I'll go and get everything ready at your booth. I want this to be a surprise."
"Hemsworth,"
muttered Sir Rollo with inarticulate scepticism, and lurked in a corner, avoiding everyone. Down at the opposite end of the hall, Jennings and Spunky were waiting for me at Sir Rollo's booth. I ducked inside the wooden walls, so we were all, for now, out of sight of the assembled villagers. A small cardboard sign bearing Sir Rollo's name was the only thing on the table. "This is so exciting," I whispered to my fellow horticultural conspirators. "And so naughty. Scissors ready, Jennings?" Jennings held the implement aloft and snipped the air by way of confirmation. "Splendid." I took my seat at the floral print tablecloth and shrugged off my tweed jacket, beneath which I was wearing a plain pink blouse. "Cut me open, Jeeves." With innate deftness of touch, Jennings slipped the tips of the shears into my blouse, just beneath the collar, and cut away at the fabric. Round he went, circumnavigating my bust as tightly as he could, until an oval of pink silk flopped down, and my globular breasts surged out through the hole, landing with two heavy thuds upon the linen which covered the wooden table. Spunky had done a spiffing job. Each booby was rendered dark green, with lighter green zigzags radiating out from my nipples, which he had painted a dull beige. Thus, what had been deposited on the table looked remarkably like two proud, ripe, healthy watermelons being presented by a young lady with no figurative melons of her own.
"You have outdone yourself, Mr. Spunkmeyer," said Jennings.
"I've never been a still life before," I giggled. "Do you think the judge will fall for it?"
"Our plan stands an inordinately high chance of succeeding," Jennings said. "Oh, hello, Sir Rollo."
Sir Rollo had finally decided to come over to the booth to see what we were up to, and was standing, mouth agape, monocle falling from his bulging right eye. "Well," I said, proudly indicating my painted melons, "what do you think?"
"You had me fooled, certainly,"
said Sir Rollo, high spirits gradually returning.
"What a pair! They're even bigger than mine."
"And firmer," I said, patting the side of my left one. And after a short wait for our turn, I understood why Jennings was so confident. For into our booth stepped the judge, none other than the doddering, short-sighted, Reverend Percival Pinkerton.
"Ah, Sir Rollo," said the myopic minister, "we had been given to understand that you would be withdrawing."
"I don't know where you got that idea," said Sir Rollo. "I'm very much still in the game."
Reverend Pinkerton narrowed his eyes behind thick spectacles and peered down at my green, nude bust.
"Melons, eh?" he said. "And who's this young lady?"
"Miss Felicity Fornham," said Sir Rollo, "a friend of my nephew's from London, a great vegetable enthusiast."
"Better a dish of vegetables where love is," said the vicar, clasping his hands together, "than a fattened ox served with hatred. Proverbs, chapter 15.
Better still, I thought, a huge pair of boobies, though that wasn't the kind of sentiment I imagined would be found in the hallowed pages of the good book, so I kept it to myself.
"So, to business," said the vicar. "First, allow me to weigh them."
I placed my hands under my breasts and hefted them up, standing at the same time, and attempting to give the impression that they were not, in fact, attached to me. I deposited them into the clergyman's open hands. Now, I have done many very naughty things in my life. I had done a few up until this point, and I've done a great many since. But gulling the vicar into gripping my boobies was by far the naughtiest I'd ever felt in my young life. Of course, he thought he was testing melons at a village fete and was none the wiser. But the more he hefted, the more he squeezed, the more those God-fearing fingers probed my verdantly rendered flesh, the more the taboo nature of the situation heightened my erotic state of being, quite frankly. Every girl with boobies like mine should have a man who treats her with the same erudite respect as Reverend Percival Pinkerton showed prize melons.
Quite unlike any melons I've ever felt, the man of the cloth murmured as he fondled my breasts. They're heavy, but they have a sort of weightlessness to them at the same time. And although taut and rigid, the rind is nevertheless curiously tender and pliant to the touch. A truly extraordinary paradox.
A pair of what? I asked. I'd never heard them called ducks before.
A paradox, Miss Fortnum, said the vicar. I have felt countless melons in my time, but these melons possess conflicting properties, which should not by rights coexist, and yet here they are in my hands.
I stifled a moan as the vicar ran his thumbs over what he thought were the melon stalks, but were, in fact, my increasingly stiff nipples. He was unwittingly giving my bosoms the loving seeing to of their lives. I was glad that the green paint would be giving me the excuse for a long soak in the tub later, as I'd be needing a lot of soapy, spongy attention from Jennings at bath time. As for the vicar, it was just as well he was unaware of the obscenity of his actions. If he were short-sighted now, he'd have been struck blind if the man upstairs had an inkling that he was having anywhere near as much fun as I was. "Feel the stalks again," I found myself saying. "Rub them with your thumbs, like you did before."
"If you insist," said Reverend Pinkerton with a shrug,
and returned his thumbs to my nipples, rolling them around as he explored their distinctly unmelon-like pucker texture. I suppressed another whimper of pleasure. I wanted to move into the vicarage fruit bowl so I could get his breast-fondling treatment every minute of every day. But all good things must come to an end, and Reverend Pinkerton's melon assessment reached its conclusion.
"You can take them back now, Miss Fortnum," he said.
I had momentarily forgotten the masquerade, so lost was I in the loving attention being bestowed upon my boobies by this laying on of hands. But Sir Rollo gave me a meaningful nudge, and I snapped back to attention. "Thank you, Vicar," I said, and play-acted lifting my own breasts out of his hands with my own, and leaned back once more, sitting and depositing the decoy melons back onto the linen tablecloth before me. The vicar bowed and nodded at all of us, and moved on to judge the next table of produce.
"Good work, Felicity," said Sir Rollo, bristling with excitement once more. "Your luscious melons may have won me the contest."
And indeed, as the afternoon sun cast long shadows over the village green, it was Sir Rollo's melons that were named Best in Show. Sir Rollo accepted the 10-shilling prize money and took all the credit in his lengthy acceptance speech. He had to, of course, but I quietly basked in the pride that my boobies, now clothed under my tweed jacket and a fresh pink blouse which Jennings had brought along, were not just any old boobies, but award-winning boobies. Award-winning by the standards of vegetable rather than human standards, but it was a start. But as the erotic sensory memory of that fondling faded with the setting sun, and the villagers began to take down the stalls and tents, the guilt at having tricked the vicar gnawed away at me. I had made things up to Sir Rollo, but although I can be rather vindictive when wronged, I balk at deceiving the innocent. So I caught the vicar on his way back to the church. "Reverend Pinkerton?"
"Miss Fortnum, how nice to see you again. Thank you for presenting me with Sir Rollo's produce earlier on, a most deserved winner."
Yes, I said, chewing nervously at my plump lower lip. I wanted to talk to you about that. I'm not especially religious, and I know you're Church of England and not the other lot, but, you see, there's something I want to confess.
Something you wish to get off your chest,
said the vicar, with a strange smile. Quite, I said. Then his meaningful double entendre struck me. You mean, you know?
I may be half blind, said Reverend Pinkerton, but I'm not stupid. Congratulations once again, Miss Fortnum, on your champion melons.
And with that, the filthy vicar bade me a good evening and walked back to the church. Dinner on Sunday evening back at the manor was, unsurprisingly, a jolly affair, the mood dictated, as usual, by Sir Rollo himself, who was back in high spirits and sitting at our end of the table, away from Lady Rosalind, and thus able to indulge in some lascivious flirtation once more. And this meant, of course, that the wager was very much still on. Both Dickie and I, neck and neck in the running to squeeze my breasts into the conversation as many times as we could. I was pink as a lobster after a 2-hour stint in the bath, with Jennings on booby-scrubbing duty, and my squeaky clean breasts were resplendent in a sort of grey, toga-esque, off-the-shoulder wraparound number. Sir Rollo wiped red wine from his mouth with his sleeve and addressed my bosom directly.
"You're looking particularly glowing this evening," he said.
"Are you talking to me or my breasts?" I said. Ex-Benedict updated the secret tally.
"You might get a more intelligent conversation out of the breasts, Uncle," Dickie teased.
Egg scribbled again.
"Oh, sorry, my dear Felicity," said Sir Rollo, slurring somewhat.
We were back on first-name terms, the vegetable-crushing incident now water under the bridge. "No need whatsoever to apologize, Rollo," I said, ignoring Dickie. "You can talk to my bosoms all you like." The three-way conversation that ensued between Sir Rollo, Dickie, and me caused Eggs Benedict to fill his notebook and start another one. When all of us, rather tipsy, Sir Rollo rather more than rather tipsy, began to retire for bed, Eggs summoned Dickie and me over to a quiet corner by the staircase to announce the final score.
"Well, who won?" said Dickie. "It was me, wasn't it?"
"Don't be absurd, Dickie," I said. "I'm the one with the boobies. I must have won."
"You're both wrong," said Eggs Benedict. "I added it all up, and it's a draw. 314 entrants each of Felicity's bust."
Dickie laughed good-natured.
"I don't believe it. Well, I deserve some credit at least. It wasn't as easy for me as it was for Felicity here."
"The rules were the rules, Dickie," I said. Dickie bade us good night and made his way to his room, still chuckling to himself. But the joke was to be on him. Jennings was waiting for me in my room, packing for the morning's journey back to London.
"I shall lay out your clothes, Miss Fortnum. What will Miss be wearing for breakfast?"
"Well, the wager was a draw," I said, "and the rules, as I recall, were that, in the event of a draw, both of us were to forfeit. So, much like Dickie, I will be taking my breakfast in the bath." Jennings gave me one of his pained looks.
"Is Miss quite certain in that regard?"
he said. "Yes, I'm quite certain," I said. I wasn't.
"Very well, Miss," said Jennings. "I shall lay out your travelling clothes for after breakfast, then."
I slept like a log. Monday. Much as Sir Rollo's jollity had been restored, so had his cocks, and it was a particularly enthusiastic cock-a-doodle-doo that roused me the following morning. I bathed, dried myself off, and simply walked straight from the bathroom, out the bedroom door, down the stairs, and into the dining room for breakfast. Dickie was already there, fully clothed. Oh, well. "Morning, everyone," I said. Lady Rosalind fainted, and Sir Rollo stepped over her unconscious body to greet me.
"Good morning, my dear," he said. "You look absolutely stunning this morning. Usually we dress for breakfast, but in your case I'm always happy to make an exception. What can I get you to eat? There's bacon and eggs, but I'm afraid you'll have to make do with grapefruit, as we're fresh out of melons."
"That's all right," I giggled. I brought my own. This has been Felicity Fortnum Undresses for Breakfast, written by Leslie Finch, narrated by Posy Clifford. Copyright 2019 by Leslie Finch. Production copyright by Leslie Finch.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.